and a very fine evening to everybody out there in podcast land. This is Tom at Tom Harris USA, and this is episode number 51 of the Tom Harris USA podcast, coming to you from a very warm, for the second week of November, Chicago, Illinois. It's just been incredibly warm, actually, and I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all, but, you know, fall is really here, and we have now a lot of trees are bare. You know, a lot of the leaves are gone. Peak leaves were about 3 weeks ago now, probably about the time when Pete and I went on our canoe trip, which I talked about way, way back. Now a lot of trees are actually barren of leaves completely, and there's a lot of leaves around on the ground. But the temperature has been really warm, and it's been really interesting to go around and walk around the park. And of course, I have time for these things right now because I don't have anything else to do. I ended up going up to Evanston the other day. I decided to walk up there. I had an appointment at my former employer to fill out some paperwork, which my former boss had lost. And it was just a gorgeous day out, and just really happy to actually be able to take the time and walk and enjoy the walk. Because before, you know, I was walking home from work. I was, you know, going and working all day and then coming home. And it's a whole different experience. For one thing, I was walking the opposite direction, which made it seem a lot more new and more interesting because I was walking the opposite direction, but also because I wasn't rushed for time. I wasn't, you know, I had to get there, you know, before they went to lunch or whatever, but I didn't have any kind of urgency to the walk. And I think that walks are best when you don't have any sense of urgency and you're just going somewhere. Wandering aimlessly doesn't really do it for me. I really would rather have a destination in mind. Except, of course, when I'm recording the show. Because I often talk on the show without having any specific aim in mind. Not this show, though, because I actually do have something planned for you. I've been promising a while to do a show on cold reading. And this is that show, so you can look forward to hearing that. But I might have some other things going on in this episode as well. Before I get started, though, on cold reading, I wanted to talk about, just for a few minutes, a film that I saw the other day. Now, this is an interesting little film, and it was a film called Head, H-E-A-D, and stars the Monkees. Now, those of you who are of the younger generation probably aren't real familiar with this film. This film was made in 1968, sort of at the height of the psychedelic era, starring the Monkees. Now, the Monkees were a pop group band that was kind of an artificially formed band. I mean, it wasn't like lifelong friends who knew each other and played music together, kind of in the way that the Beatles were, for example. But it was actually put together by music executives as a vehicle for a TV series which aired on Saturday morning. So basically, you know, they were formed for kids. Now, despite the fact that the band was actually formed as a vehicle for a TV series, and really designed to appeal to 8 to 10-year-olds, the Monkees actually had a good amount of talent. They were, you know, songwriters, musicians, etc. They played a lot of their own stuff. They wrote a lot of their own stuff. And as time went on, I believe they did more and more of that than they did in the very beginning. But they had a TV show on CBS here in the States for 2 years, back during the 1960s. And then in 1968, their show was canceled. So at this point, when this movie Head was made, the Monkees were pretty much not a dead act exactly, because I'm sure the listener demand, and, you know, it still had a lot of fans out there. But as a property, were on the decline. Their TV show had been canceled, and there was still, you know, maybe a couple of years left in their careers. And I guess they did kind of go along for another few albums after their show was canceled. But you know, there is that certain point where people just kind of stopped caring. The people who were really interested in the TV show, once the show was gone, their interest didn't really carry along to the musical projects. The Monkey Show was actually created by Raybert Productions, and one of the founders of Raybert Productions was a guy called Bob Raffelson. And after The Monkey Show was canceled, Raffelson actually collaborated with somebody whose name you probably will recognize, Jack Nicholson, to create this movie Head. Now, Head is not at all like the Monkees TV show, at least not on the surface. There is some of that in there, and I think they left it in there to make it more familiar and not just be way out there psychedelia. And to make a long story short, the movie consists of a series of vignettes, which are very, very loosely tied together. And there is some wonderful cinematography. There's some fantastic special effects, the psychedelic special effects going on in the film. It just was a weird sort of stream of consciousness kind of a tale, which was very different from anything, you know, the very superficial kind of clowning around that they'd done in the TV show. And I actually kind of grew up ignorant of this film. I didn't really know anything about it. And one of my listeners was a guy named Rich Castelli, who you've all heard about and have heard from, actually introduced me to this film back in the early 80s. And I can remember when one of the local TV stations had scheduled to play it like at 2 o'clock in the morning on a late night. And they showed this sort of hacked up version of it. I remember getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and recording this on VHS tape. And interesting, you know, it had been years since I'd seen it. And recently discovered that Netflix had it on their list. So I rented it. And what an interesting film that was. I think I was more impressed by it now than I was back in the 80s. Just because it was a very surreal film and a very loosely tied together sort of stream of consciousness thing, sort of like a PG version of William S. Burroughs. And of course that reference is probably going to be lost on a lot of you as well, and I apologize for that, but you can look it up. William S. Burroughs, he was a writer, he wrote Naked Lunch and among other things. Big favorite of mine as far as writing is concerned. Very, very interesting to see that film again now after probably had been about 15 years since the last time I'd watched it. And now I'm kind of wondering, should I get the DVD? Of course, the DVD doesn't have any kind of extra features to be worthwhile. Well, one of the interesting things about the film, though, before I get off that subject, is that it had some really, really interesting cameos going on. Of course, Jack Nicholson appeared in it. He was one of the writers of the film. Frank Zappa had a cameo. The boxer, Sonny Liston, who I believe was the world heavyweight champion at the time. Annette Funicello, former Mouseketeer. The singer, Tony Basil, who later, many, many years later, went on to record a song called Mickey, which became a number one hit worldwide. Terry Garr, it was one of her very first film parts. She appeared. Just kind of an interesting mix of people. Believe that there's still some controversy over the Monkees, and I guess the controversy is whether or not they're eligible to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I am, you know, very solidly behind them in that. I think anybody who, you know, even if they're being manufactured, is taken into account. They sold 65 million records. I mean, that's an enormous amount. And, you know, commercial success. I don't know that they were highly influential. They were basically a light pop band. But on the other hand, you know, you've got very derivative sort of musicians in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. And of course, if being a manufactured product means anything at all, then I think you're going to have a lot of trouble filling the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the future, because obviously some of the biggest bands of all time, at least, you know, the biggest bands of the last, you know, 10 or 15 years have been artificial manufactured bands, bands like, you know, the Backstreet Boys and that crap. So it really is a question of what exactly is a manufactured band. I mean, there's a lot of these groups don't play their own instruments. They didn't write their own songs and so forth. And the Monkees did. So therefore I come down on their side. And so I don't understand why the Monkees wouldn't qualify. At any rate, if you have any interest in the 60s and sort of the counterculture of that era, I think that this would be an invaluable document for people to look at, because I think this is very much of its era. And certainly if you have it available to you and you have an interest in it, I would definitely check it out if you have Netflix or something like that where you are. Okay, so for some time now, I've been promising a little bit of a show on cold reading. This was something that I talked about a little bit in a prior episode. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail now. And we'll talk about cold reading, warm reading, and hot reading, and how they differ. Now, these are techniques that are used by so-called psychics who use these techniques in order to sucker the gullible into thinking that they somehow have hidden knowledge, that they have powers that enable them to gain insight into complete strangers' lives. And it's very commonly used, and it's something that's been going on since at least the 19th century, probably even before that. And you probably had these, when you had these roving fortune tellers going around the countryside in England back in the 1600s and 1700s, they were probably using cold reading techniques as well. It's something that has been very good at making money for so-called psychics. Now, my mother was part of a religious cult. I've mentioned this before. And the head of this religious cult was a cold reader named Elizabeth. She had a local television show in Fort Myers back in the late 70s. And it can be very effective if you're not really sure what to look for. And I would kind of encourage, well, anybody who's listening to this who actually believes in psychic powers would actually be doing themselves a great service to look into cold reading, because this is probably what they're being subjected to. This is probably what people are doing. Now, people don't always realize that what they're doing is cold reading. I was reading an article the other day about this woman who used to be a New Age therapist. She didn't come into this intending to be cold reading, but she came to a realization over a period of years that she was actually using cold reading techniques in her so-called New Age therapy business. And once she realized, oh my gosh, I don't have any psychic abilities, she actually stopped doing it, because she realized, I'm really fooling these people, and this is dishonest. Not all cold readers are so principled or moral that they would actually stop doing what they're doing, because there's a lot of money to be made in bilking the gullible. Religion's been doing it for 2,000 years, and psychics have been doing it for at least that long. So it's not anything that's all that uncommon. So what cold reading entails is kind of throwing out ideas to people in the hopes of getting a response. Now, one of the most common manifestations of cold reading in pop culture now are the shows like, I think it's called Mike Edwards from Beyond, or John Edwards from Beyond, something like that. This is a cold reader. He only works in large groups. He doesn't do, I guess, the individual client type stuff. If he does, he probably charges an outrageous amount of money, because these people make, you know, $500 for a session with one person. I mean, people like Sylvia Brown. And of course, it's all bullshit, which make it, it's just a huge ripoff. But anyway, these people, he claims to talk to the dead. And what he'll do is he'll get an auditorium full of people, And he'll make comments in the hopes of getting a reaction from an audience member. And he'll throw out this very vague comments, you know, because these are people who, for whatever reason, have decided to pay their hard-earned dough to come and see this guy in the hopes that he'll contact dead relatives of theirs. This harkens right back to the spiritualist movement of the 19th century. I mean, it's the Victorian parlor tricks taken to the level of a network television show. Now, a very bad cold reader might actually just kind of throw out wild guesses or wild statements in the hope of actually getting some kind of a response from somebody in the audience. And they do that all the time. And you have to understand that the TV show psychics, the ones like John Edwards, you know, talking to the dead, they're the ones who, they really edit their shows quite a lot. And because most of what they throw out are misses that nobody responds to. So they have to only include the things that people respond to. So for example, the first thing that they'll do is establish that they're not seeing something clear, because if you say, you know, if you want to throw out something that's too specific, you're more likely than not going to get a negative reply to this. I can give you a very good example of this. This is a good example of how not to do a question while you're cold reading, courtesy of the Ross Petzold program.
Do you know a girl called Thelma?
No.
Okay.
Now, 90% of the time, that is going to be the response that you're going to get to a direct question being asked to you by a cold reader. And that's one of the reasons why cold readers avoid this sort of very direct question. You don't want to be too specific. However, sometimes you do get lucky. Here's another clip of Ross doing exactly that.
I can see a slight outlay of a letter on the top of the card. This is the sun is reflecting on the top of the card. I'm getting the letter F.
Yeah.
Do you have someone in your family called Fred?
I do.
And is Fred still with us, or has Fred passed on?
No, he's my cousin.
Cousin Fred.
I can't believe that.
This is the cards, not me.
How do you do this?
Now, notice the contrast between those two clips. The first clip, Ross asks Yannick if he knows a girl named Thelma. And the answer, of course, is no, because, you know, nobody is named Thelma. This is a ridiculous thing. However, when Ross asked him if he knew somebody named Fred, Yannick automatically put that into context, because A, Fred is a very common name in Germany, and it's like Mike here, you know, there's a lot of people named Fred. And, of course, he jumped in his mind to the first person he knows. And cold readers do that all the time. And this is, for example, you have John Edwards talking to the dead, and he'll say, well, I'm picking up a message from a woman, a middle-aged woman, who has a name that begins with M, you know, Marilyn, Mary. You know, and somebody in the audience is going to make this connection. They're going to come up to, oh, my Aunt Marlene, you know. And this is exactly what cold readers do. Now, in Ross's defense here, he was not actually cold reading. Ross doesn't claim to be a psychic. The show that he did, the tarot show, the carrot cards show, as he called it, which is hilarious, by the way. I believe it's the July 6th, 2009 Ross Petzold program. You can go download it off his site, which is www.rosspetzold.co.uk. It really is very typical of the sort of tricks that cold readers use. So you would make a broad assertion, and then you would watch for the reactions of people who are in your audience to see what their reaction is. And if they have a particular physical response, or they have a particular, you know, vocal response to it, then you would actually continue to focus your questioning, your cold reading. And that's basically how cold reading operates. And you can sometimes get lucky and make a hit. Now, most of the time, though, you're going to miss. Now, one of the things that a cold reader is hoping for is some sort of a reaction in return, because that makes their job easier. They remember, the whole thing about cold reading is they really know nothing about you. They don't have psychic powers. They don't have this knowledge. They're dependent on you to feed them any kind of knowledge that they get. And a lot of times they'll take that knowledge from, you know, just sort of general tendencies in people, you know. And here's a real good example of how somebody would give a cold reader extra knowledge that they didn't have before. Again, this is from the Ross Patzalt program.
I can sense something. I'm sensing. Do you enjoy fish and chips?
Yeah, I love it.
This is good.
That's so funny, because my star sign's fish as well.
So there's a good example of what a cold reader is looking for. They want people to give them more information than what they asked for. And when you, and just take this as an example, even though this isn't a serious, you know, cold reading that was going on here. This is just Ross having some fun. But Yannick actually gave him information that he didn't have before, that his star sign is the fish, or Pisces. And knowing that, your typical cold reader is going to understand, oh, okay, this is interesting. This is some knowledge that the person who is involved knows something about their star sign, which means that they are likely to be receptive to an astrological take on things. So they can tailor their reading even more, even though that might not seem like a lot of information. There are certain traits which traditionally are supposed to fit into this idea of your star sign, etc. It's all bullshit, of course, but there's a lot of people out there who actually believe this crap. So that's another point in what cold reading does. You make your broad assertions, you get your what little information you can, and then you expand on it. Now, after you've gotten a few little pieces of information, the reading changes a little bit. It's no longer a cold reading, because you now the more information you have, the further away from cold you're getting. Because cold really kind of implies that you've come with nothing and you just have to make sense out of what information you have. And at this point, it becomes a warm reading, because you're actually getting a sense of what this person is about. And unless this person is feeding false information to the so-called psychic, they can make certain assumptions. And some of these things are based on human nature. Some of these things are just common human behavior. Now, if you want to debunk a psychic, one of the easiest things to do is to give them false information, and very deliberately give them false information, because this is going to throw them down the wrong path, and they're going to start making these incredibly wild guesses and so forth. And when you have these things happening, you know you're dealing with a cold reader. And a lot of these people are. And that's just the nature of the beast, because the cold reading techniques is how they gather their information. And the more information they have on you, the more accurate they can be when they're talking about you. The better they know you, basically, the better they know you. And when they talk about your future or whatever, you're trying to give you insight into your own life that they're kind of making up as they go, they're at least basing it on more and more and more. And the better they get to know you, the more accurate they're going to seem. And the gullible people get really sucked into this. And my mom got really sucked into this, despite the fact that she was actually being fed bad information. But to rationalize, and it's very easy to rationalize this, that she was thinking, oh, well, she has all this other stuff right. That other stuff, of course, being the information that my mom fed to the psychic and the psychic fed back to her. Because basically that's what they do. They take your information, then repeat it back to you. And then you're amazed at how accurate they are. So she figures she's right about those things. So therefore, what she's telling me now must be right as well. And the problem, of course, is that it usually isn't. It's something that's being put forward by the so-called psychic. In a lot of cases, it's something that they want you to believe. They want you to behave in a certain way. And then, for example, the ASDNR, which is the group that my mother belonged to, they wanted people to move to their compound in Arkansas to invest in this commune that they were setting up in Arkansas. So the more they know, the easier it is to manipulate people. And of course, you know, anytime you're dealing with a psychic at all, and I mean, I would hope that most of my listeners are smart enough not to bother, you know, I just want to avoid them. Yeah. Because you're just going to lose a lot of money if you get involved in this heavily. I mean, if it's a one-time go, you know, and you're just doing it for fun or to just kind of see what it's like, I can kind of understand that. But be aware that if you do, keep an eye out for these cold reading techniques. You'll notice that they are very, very vague, and as they find out more information from you about who you are and what your life is like, then they start to tailor their message to that. And the further away from a cold reading they get. So I guess the logical question here would be, why does anybody go to them? Well, the reason being that they don't know what to look for. They don't really understand the whole idea of cold reading, and they don't understand that they are feeding the so-called psychic all the information that they need. And some of these so-called psychics are really good at it. So it's hard to tell if you don't have foreknowledge. And to the really gullible, it may seem as though they have miraculous powers of psychic observation. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who don't think critically. That's one of the things that this show was created to address, is that people need to learn to think critically. And let's face it, people want to believe in psychics. They want to believe in these extraordinary people with extraordinary abilities. Now, I will add, kind of in closing, that psychics are not the only ones who use cold reading techniques. It's used quite frequently by religious leaders, by pastors, especially by faith healers. The faith healing is another one of those things, and it's very much like the John Edwards, you know, talking to the dead type shows, because it's based on the same sort of trickery. And faith healers, in addition to being, you know, outright fraudulent most of the time, they plant people in the audience to, you know, to be healed. And it's actually the same people every town they go to. They go from town to town, and they have like six different people that they choose from. And it wouldn't be the same person at each place, but they're part of their entourage. And it gets people worked up and therefore more receptive to their message. But they also use cold reading techniques. And I've seen this on religious television shows and, you know, clips on YouTube and so forth. But they're actually being fed the information through a receiver that fits in their ear. And if you research this, you'll find actually there have been times when debunkers have gone in and they have picked up the radio signals going to the receiver. So they can hear somebody backstage talking to the faith healer and giving them the information that they need to make it seem as though they know more than they do. And it's a very common technique, like I said. Anyhow, I'm just about all out of time, so I'll continue perhaps this discussion another time. But thanks for listening, and as always, if you have any comments, questions, whatever, you can send your emails to tom@tomharrisusa.com. And in the immortal words of Ross Patzelt, thank you very much, and may the Force be with you.